Welcome to the spring issue of the Oldie Magazine podcast. Here we have Ferdy Rouse, our editorial assistant, who has written a piece on the hot topic of fat shaming, and with it, fat acceptance. In the piece, Ferdy claims to be a chubster, referencing the slightly overfamiliar and slightly unfair nickname, Billy Bunter, which has been given to him by our columnist Wilfred Diath. You'd think that in the light of this, he'd be revelling in the fat acceptance movement, where fat people are claiming that they are sick of being discriminated against. Instead, Ferdy finds it sad that they are choosing to be ignorant of the stark facts. Increased risk of diabetes, cancer, and the other terrible pitfalls of obesity that he references in the piece. So, Ferdy, how would you define fat acceptance?
Well, fat acceptance, sort of as it goes, is it's fat people sort of trying to sort of establish themselves as being an identity, in a sense, rather than being sort of something which is arrived at. It's something you begin with, and sort of from that, as a result, there's a claim that because they begin as being fat, that therefore they are, because they're destined to be fat, as it were, in becoming such.
You've said in the office that it's something that makes you very angry. Are you able to elaborate on that at all? The self, I believe you've called them the self-righteous bunch.
Yeah. I must say, it does just drive me absolutely crazy, because it's just unbelievable levels of denial. I mean, there's, if you scrap every study you see, I mean, you know, I'll start from my own experiences and explain that, you know, university, ate really badly, got ill very frequently, beginning of this job, for instance, as well. I mean, wasn't exercising, you're more tired, you don't breathe as well when you're doing any form of exercise, be it walking for 10, 15 minutes, whatever it might be, and it is just wholly unsatisfying, just living life like that, because you wake up more knackered than you would be any other point. And that's sort of one of the main issues as well, is that it's this sort of this creation of an anti of a stereotype, as it were, they're creating a stereotype of people who talk about fat. They sort of say that, you know, people think that fat people are lazy. That might well be the case, but what's frustrating about that is that it's not the fat people who are lazy, it's that we are just more easily tired.
Do you yourself actually know anyone who is in favour of fat acceptance? Because you reference in your piece various groups, the HAES, which stands for Health Every Size, and the NAFA, so that's the National Association for the Advancement of Fat Acceptance. These all seem like quite sort of foreign entities. Do you know anyone personally who's a campaigner for fat acceptance?
I must say, no, I don't. But the thing is, what's interesting about those, at first this piece was sort of more, the aim behind it was to sort of look at the approaches of it overseas. And what brought it very close to home was Sophie Hagen's to the Cancer Research UK advert stating that obesity is the second largest cause of cancer behind tobacco.
That campaign is a big advertising campaign that's caused a big backlash on social media.
Yeah. One of the main focuses, actually, is that there seems to be a very grey line between what fat shaming is and what facts are. And at the moment, there's no line at all, actually. It's that if you bring forward something which, if you're being made uncomfortable about being fat, it means that you know, for example, with this, you know, hearing that, from my perspective, it's unnerving, knowing that obesity is the second largest cause of cancer.
I think, the preventable cause.
Well, it is a fact. It's not, it's not as if Cancer Research UK are doing this to damage people's points of view. The fact that some people on social media, you know, will manipulate that and then sort of, you know, for example, you know, you get sort of lots of abusive posts at Sophie Hagen. I mean, I don't agree with her, but, you know, there is that sort of element of that very sort of violent attitude on, which is purely sort of done over the web. But,
and so Sophie Hagen is a sort of leading voice for fat acceptance.
She was certainly the loudest voice, I felt, at least. I mean, you reported on quite a few papers.
Yeah.
You know.
And is she fat herself?
I mean, yeah, I don't want to say it, but I mean, I suppose she is overweight. ACT is about you know, obesity and, you know, well, not so obesity, but being fat. And, you know, there is a sort of a strain within it, which is quite interesting. There's a certain skit where you've gone out for a drink with someone of your kind, and she sort of, it creates this sort of like, he sort of says, you know, what
of us and that.
Yeah, a leader sort of, precisely. Sort of, she sort of says, oh yeah, I've never been chosen as a leader of my people. It's like, it's just, it's us and them narrative, which is just bizarre. And it's, you know, on top of that, as well as, for example, you see, you know, things saying, I don't buy the fat is unhealthy. To, you know,
yeah,
and it's all sort of just it's essentially much like what Whitney Thor says, which I reference in the piece, which is just ask for discrimination. And I just find that just, it's so bad.
Do you think that these attitudes and this whole fat acceptance movement that's getting a lot of airtime in the newspapers at the moment, do you think it's on the bandwagon of Generation Snowflake, everyone's hypersensitive, everyone feels entitled?
Or
do you think that it's been sort of gathering steam for a long time?
Well, I mean, given sort of the fact that the NAAFA began in 1969, you could argue it's gathered steam, but I would say it's a bit of, I think it's grown very big, very quickly. I mean, it's, you know, it's been there for a while, lurking, but I think with the prevalence of identity politics now, this construction of fat as an identity was always going to make more traction in this instance. It, you know, because, you know, before, you know, I can't, no one can really pinpoint when, I suppose, but it kind of needed now, really, for it to be as big as it is.
And where do you think it sits alongside things like trans acceptance, gender fluidity? Do you think it's a completely separate entity, or do you think you can put it alongside those kind of movements?
The reason I sort of speak about the beast is because I know being fat. I'm aware of that. I mean, and for my part, I mean, from what I understand of the transgender politics and all that kind of thing, it's that on that way you can't change it. And in that sense, I think that's where it separates.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, though, I mean, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, there is incredible like anger and sort of to be violent sentiments expressed on Twitter in both debates. And so I think, regardless of one, they have that in common, whereas
you can believe in the root of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know.
Freddie, yourself, you say that you're overweight. Do you feel that you've suffered or encountered prejudice as a result of that over the course of your life? You say in the piece that you're now 22.
Yeah, I mean, at school, sort of inevitably, like, it's. I mean, the thing is, though, is I don't think it's because I was fat, it's because it's sort of, everyone picks on everyone, it was just a reason to do it. I don't think it's, you know, it's also, I mean, for my part, like, I was quite an anxious child at school, and I think that it's a reason to have a go at someone, and you'll always find one. People will always find one with Willie. It's not actually to do with fat, which is what I think is, I mean, that's pretty ruthless explanation, but I think that's a fair description, really.
In defence of fat acceptance, at a young age, in your chubby, and it results in bullying, it's not actually your fault. At a young age, you're the product of your parents, so you're being overfed, and surely you shouldn't be discriminated because of that. Equally, some people are actually fat beyond their control. They have to take medication that causes them to overeat, or it just makes them fat, or they're born with big bones, which is surely a genetic disposition. So with these factors in mind, surely it's best not to discriminate against fat people at all, because you could be probing in an area that it isn't their choice.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, with the piece, and I hope I've expressed this so far in this discussion, that I have not by any means encouraging discrimination against fat people. It's just that, for example, from a parent's point of view, I mean, you do see the odd sort of article or sort of, you know, people sort of calling in to whichever radio programme you listen to, and that's what I say, that it needs to be more sort of healthcare, there needs to be more money to be put into healthcare, all that kind of thing. And I think that's just, it's, if you as a parent are doing a sort of, you know, feeding your child, you can't just ask the state to do it for you. There needs to be a sort of a, for example, there were sort of even speculations of, you know, should we offer surgery, sort of like weight loss surgery to sort of teens because of their obesity. And I think that absolutely not. I mean, it's got to be a discipline thing. I mean,
it's an education.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think educating people about the dangers of it is the number one thing. I mean, you know, you can't just blame, you know, things beyond your control. I mean,
so you think it's great that this Cancer Research UK advertising campaign, you think that that's actually doing a great job because it's bringing it, whether you like it or not, there's billboards on your way to work saying...
I mean, absolutely. It did it. I think it did it in a very sort of neutral and sort of, you know, legitimate manner. That it wasn't abusive, it wasn't coaxing, it just said, this is a fact. And it doesn't... I mean, the fact people take it badly is not the fault of Cancer Research UK. Mm-hmm. They sort of put it in a very
They've quite vocally stood by the campaign. And actually, I thought one of the visuals was very good. There's a cigarette packet with chips in it, which I guess would be cigarettes. And I think that lines up very well with the takeout that it's the second easiest way to prevent cancer, the first being stop smoking.
Exactly, I mean, it frames it in the same image. I mean, it's very well sort of put together. I think it really does work.
But... Now, Philip, I also want to speak to you about the clean eating fad. Do you think that fat acceptance and the fat pride outrage has been fueled by clean eating or the Instagram and social media phenomenon where people caption their photographs of food with hashtags like clean eating, all that kind of stuff? And is it larger people's response to...
Oh, certainly. I mean, absolutely. I mean,
like they're fed up.
I mean, sort of diet fads are, I mean, at least in my experience, the most like ridiculous thing you can have. I mean, it's so... It is damaging, but that's what's bizarre though, is that when it clearly doesn't work. I mean, people are sort of, I mean, that's why it's an industry. If it worked, it wouldn't be an industry. I mean, it has a 90% failure rate in the dieting industry, but it's trying to make money out of you. And the only way to do it is figuring out your own system, you know, one step at a time, dropping, you know, say, for example, I mean, for me, I used to have like, you know, one cake on the way to work every day. I no longer do. It is one step at a time. It's not all or nothing. So a lot of diets will say, you know, lose 4 stone in, I don't know, 2 months. And yeah, you can lose it in 2 months, but you'll put it straight back on again. Because it's not, if you do it gradually, your body becomes accustomed to it. And it does, it works completely very well. But something else you pointed out, actually, which will bring it on with the social media element, I completely agree with you. I mean, that's one of the big problems that we have, that are present at the moment, is that... you know, I mean, it's this obsession with image. I mean, for me, it's very straightforward. I just don't go on social media. It doesn't bother me. I don't care. I mean, you use Facebook purely to get in touch with friends, you know.
Yeah.
But there are some people, especially with the generation who's sort of 4 or 5 years younger than me, which I think you have to define in terms of technological generation rather than actual generation. Because for them, it's much more focused upon, you know, the likes on Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of thing. And as a result, if there's... You know, that's why image is becoming so perfect. That's the prevalence of all the, you know, different filters to make you look airbrushed. I mean, that is the problem with the image obsession. And that is, it's certainly having a negative impact on fat because it's not giving them a, you know, think this is the image of perfection, you know, carry on. In a sense, you can argue that it is mockery, but I think that's maybe a bit too intense a word, but it is a very sort of damaging thing. But...
I'm not overweight, and I find pictures with hashtag clean eating very hateful. So, how somebody who is overweight, if I
can imagine, affects me differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think. But I mean, if you sort of take away from just clean eating, if you put it more into
just the dieting,
even if you remove all references to food and just use social media as a whole, it's all very much, I mean, it's so overstated.
Narcissistic.
It's all entirely edited, it's all entirely curated, there's nothing genuine on there. I mean, not maybe, but rare.
Yeah.
And so I think that in that sense, there are people that, you know, but also, I mean, there was that argument of weight being linked to mental health. So if you argue it down that line, then mental health is what will be more instantly impacted rather than if you're sort of, you know, also as well, I mean, you know, with weight, generally you are more prone to mood swings because of bad eating. And so, as a result, you're more likely to take things. If you're in a bad mood, it'll make you make it that much worse. So it'll magnify the effect of social media, arguably. But I don't think that, well, back to the original point, I don't think it really is an excuse to sort of say that it's, you know, to take pride in it.
Yeah.
It's an avoidance of the problem.
And is fat acceptance attached to body positivity?
It is, but it shouldn't be. Because fat acceptance is, as I sort of said at the beginning, it very much takes pride in sort of fat. And it's a sort of, you can argue it's a very sort of strong form of counterculture. You've got complete polar opposites from the, you know, absolutely stick thin sort of models, all that kind of thing. And in a way, it sort of makes sense culturally to have that opposite. But body positivity, the term itself makes sense. But the thing is, it's now become sort of synonymous with fat acceptance. I mean, at least in sort of the way that certain people...
You've talked about happy at any size, happy at any shape. You're able to define what you mean by that.
Yeah, when it comes to things... Well, health at any size is the sort of... quite self-evidently in a way... be healthy, whatever shape that you are, whatever size that you are. By stating that, you know, there are some people who don't suffer from joint pain, don't feel high blood pressure, all that kind of thing. But that's only, studies have shown that's only temporary.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily long. I mean, in the short term, maybe. The long term, no. I mean, I believe it was on CNN in America, but I might have the wrong news station. There was an argument between someone from the NAAFA and a health specialist, who the NAAFA sort of representative sort of said that, from high blood pressure, all that kind of thing, and the health sort of expert sort of said, well, that's like a smoker saying, I don't have cancer, therefore it's fine.
You think that actually it's all the symptoms that are slowly building up.
Well, I mean, I don't know the exact sort of response, but it's
That sounds like quite binary. I smoke, but I don't have cancer, so I'm fine. When actually you're
well, but that sort of to illustrate sort of the ridiculousness of the fat acceptance argument. So I'm saying, you know, I don't have knee problems. You know, I have nothing at the moment. There is a sort of a suggestion that if you carry on the way you.
Well, Freddie, that's been really very interesting. Is there anything else you want to bring up or talk about? Okay, well, thank you very much for Ferdy's brilliant piece, which you will see, as I said, in the spring issue of the Aldi magazine, under Fat Pride is Fat Headed, is the headline. Okay, thanks very much, Ferdy.
Thank you.